Hey gang, welcome back. We watched stuff 87. It's me, Jeremy. Shahid's on the other end. Quick off of his residency at the emergency room. What's going on, man?
I am recuperating from American illness where it's undefined but feels like you're going to die, and thank goodness for insurance that a lot of people don't have. Like, for people who don't know, I went to the ER last night for undisclosed abdominal pain. After 2 hours of waiting and tests and IVs and drugs, I basically got a "we don't know what it is" and a bill for $125. And I'm grateful because the bill could have been a lot worse. So
yeah,
thank goodness for very good government insurance.
Yeah. So it still sucks you had to pay and they couldn't find anything. It should be like, you have to find something. Make something up. If I'm giving you any money whatsoever, if my insurance is paying you, you guys should be obligated to find something.
Trust me, if you really want them to, they'll find something.
True.
It's like going to the repair dealership for your car. Like, the mechanic will find something if you want them to. So
yeah. See, sometimes I don't think things through. So, you know. Let's see if El Rey's back yet. Ah, El Rey's back. All right, good. So I don't know if this happened to anybody else. As a quick aside, I turned on to watch Lucha Underground, even though it was a repeat. Classic episode, I think they were calling them.
Mm-hmm.
And it had something from Univision up saying that Univision, even though they signed a multi-year contract with El Rey, is no longer honoring the obligations of the contract. And I'm like, what? I had Time Warner. And like I was telling you earlier, apparently Time Warner has a contract with Univision, and Univision is actually the provider for El Rey. Because Univision is actually owned by NBC Comcast or NBC Universal.
Yeah.
My God, it's like, it's what, the rabbit hole? Just further down the rabbit hole, everything's owned by the same people, basically.
Yeah, you dig deep enough, like, it seems like it's three or four companies that own every cable channel.
Yeah, and it's no wonder we don't get any variety. But, real quick, we have a sponsor this week. I forgot about this. This was on my car at work, so I'm going to give them a plug. It's called Top East. Touch of Precision East. Walk-ins welcome. Specializing in men, women, and kids' cuts. Designs, texturizer, eyebrows, color enhancements, and much more. To book your appointment, visit www.touchofprecision.reserva.com. Hashtag experience the touch. Might have wanted to think that one through. Or hashtag more than a haircut.
Yeah. So for all you nerds, put down the Mountain Dew and get a haircut, you can go to this place.
This would be for people who would leave. I almost had a Kanye West concert, but I'm figuring most of those are white people. I wish I had something to show you. Okay, so I got to ask you this. I don't have hair. You don't have hair. Well, you go to barber, though, right?
Yes, I do, because I still have hair. It just doesn't grow the way I want it to grow, so I try to get rid of it.
As in, it comes in patches, or just leaves that one big patch on the top of your head like mine does now?
Yes.
So does your barbershop offer head painting? There's a kid with a Daffy Duck on the back of his head.
My barber actually does that, because I have a woman barber. Camera makes fun of me all the time saying, how does that work? But yes, so I know she does it for us. She doesn't know that a lot, but I know she has it as an option.
Yeah, there's a lot of... One kid's got Spider-Man on the side of his head, Daffy Duck on the back. I don't know. I guess little kids still watch Looney Tunes. That one kind of surprised me. A grown man has a picture of a wolf face, or a wolf's head. See, this is where I wish, like, if I had the temerity to actually go into a shop like this, let my hair grow out a little bit, and be like, can I have a design? But I wouldn't want to pay the money for it, because I'd be like, God, I look like a fool. Because I'm too old for that shit, so.
You're never too old to look stupid.
No, yeah, well, you know what? I don't need a haircut to help me look stupid most of the time, so, you know. just wait. Keep listening, folks. It'll come. But anyways, I don't know. Do we want to talk about wrestling first, or do we want to talk about the shows?
Let's, let's talk about wrestling first, because it won't take long, and it's, you know, sometimes folks, we do delve into wrestling. We're both wrestling fans, and, you know, in case people didn't know, I recently went to the Royal Rumble San Antonio, my first non-WrestleMania pay-per-view that actually felt like a WrestleMania. It was an awesome event, and it's funny, like, one of the, it was two experiences that kind of stood out. One was the fact that I had to wait nearly an hour to get food, because somehow people thought the Alamo Dome that there wouldn't be people that wanted to eat, which is insane considering, one, it's San Antonio, as Charles Barkley said, a city full of people. And two,
I thought it was just fat women.
And the women have help. And two, it's involving wrestling fans who tend not to be on the svelte side, to put it politely. So, yeah, that was an issue. And then two, I have never been some... I'm trying to remember the last time I heard someone as hated as Roman Reigns was when he came in at number 30. And one of the reasons was because, one, it was Roman Reigns. Two, it was because it wasn't Samoa Joe, which people went at number 30. And, yeah, so that was fun. And at least the fact that, like, you know, Samoa Joe didn't show up for the Royal Rumble because he was busy showing up on Monday Night Raw, beating up Seth Rollins, and unfortunately causing a real-life knee injury to Seth Rollins.
Okay, so going back to the Rumble real quick, I didn't for one second think it was going to be Samoa Joe at 30. I was confused why everyone, like, the hate poured out of that. You know,
you had to been there. It's...
Even like the online, have you seen those online video reactions?
Yeah.
Everyone's like, "Are you kidding me?" It's like, who? I didn't think it would be him, but I was sure as shit wasn't expecting it to be like Finn Balor or any of those guys, because they usually save like. A returning guy is usually between 27 and 28.
Okay.
Or 26.
The vibe was the way it was because it was kind of like before the event started, like 23 people were announced. So it was like you got seven spots. You're wondering, okay, Ty Dillinger will be one of them. So you might have at least like, because normally at the Rumbles, you like 2 to 3 surprises. And this year it was one. And this is like the first time in a long time where it's basically just people that were already on the roster, more or less. So people got their hopes up saying, you know, it's the Alamo Dome. It's a big thing. And as they count down, like once they got to like around 22, 23 and people saw like, okay, so I know Goldberg's left, Undertaker's left. So if you got two other spots, is it going to be Finn or Kurt Angle or Samoa Joe? And then get to like 26, 27. And it's like, no, you know, this person's in, this person's in. So it's kind of like, okay, who's going to be 30? So are we going to at least get one surprise? And then the fact that, one, you didn't get a surprise more than anything. Two, the fact that it was Roman Reigns, who wasn't necessarily like liked when he had his match against Kevin Owens. It was kind of like they were booing him but cheering the moves. But at this point, it was kind of like you weren't getting – it's. I'm trying to use the example saying, you know, imagine you want to get a PlayStation for Christmas – and you end up getting like a sewing machine.
No, you said a box of Kleenex, a box of napkins. That was it.
Yeah, that you already used an hour ago.
That killed me. I was listening to the show at work, and you always have like one gem that you think you're going like. I think you're going one way during the show, and then you bust out something else, and that was definitely one of them. Even Kevin said he was stunned, like didn't know that was coming. Box of napkins. What a horrible gift.
A box of used napkins. Not even just a box of napkins, because you already used it an hour ago, and somebody decided to put it in a box and rewrap it. So yeah, people were pissed. Like they were not like the whole boo. It was kind of like I can imagine how the vibe would have been Philly at Rumble when Daniel Bryan got eliminated, and it was like people realized, oh, Roman Reigns is going to win this. And how people turned on Roman Reigns and booed The Rock. Like, it was probably worse this time because it was, you know, at least Roman Reigns was at the point where he was popular, but people just like Daniel Bryan more. This one is like, you know, you've been pushed. This is what, the third? We're doing this whole Roman Reigns, like the third year in a row. So people kind of like, it's another year getting tired of him. You thought you already saw him because he had his match, so you thought you'd be safe from him. So for him to pop up like a bad penny and take away people's, like, you know, expectations. Like, it's bad enough that he came out, but it was worse that people wanted somebody else, and it was him. And he eliminated The Undertaker, which, oh, people lost their damn. They start chanting, this is BS. And it wasn't just like a small section. It was the entire arena. So that, it's a, and it's funny where I had made a joke like, Vince McMahon found a way for people to cheer Randy Orton of all people winning the Royal Rumble.
Yeah. I know you already covered this. If you want to hear like more in-depth, I honestly can't remember what stunk or any audio it was, but it was from Monday or Tuesday with Shahid and Kevin. Check it out. Let's go to Monday, though. Samoa Joe finally shows up. That was a shocking surprise. I didn't expect that at all. Everyone kind of figured Joe was showing up eventually. I figured it was going to be SmackDown. And then he comes out, you know, because Triple H, they teased it at NXT. Nothing on Sunday. And then they teased it. They teased the confrontation with Seth and him all basically from, what, mid-show on. We think they're finally going to give us something to start the WrestleMania hype. And this guy in jeans and a t-shirt starts beating the hell out of Seth Rollins. I didn't know who it was at first.
Yeah, I only knew when he looked up. You know what's funny about that whole thing? The way, it's amazing how the setup, basically, like, Triple H was the bad guy but came off as the hero.
Yeah, yep.
And it's funny because Seth Rollins up there, and he's agreed and everything, and he's rightfully so, kind of like, you screwed me out the title, and you haven't come out since. But they have him like, you know, what if I show up at your job? What if I show up at your house and one of your daughters open up the door? He gonna smack around a rose till daddy comes to the door? Like, I don't really think you want one of your heroes coming off as sinister. Like, you can be a badass, you can be a tough guy, and you can even be crazy. You don't want to be borderline evil. And they had Seth Rollins coming off close, like, you know, this man needs to be arrested. So when Triple H comes out and saying, you know, the longer the promo went, the more heroic he came off. Like, you know, I gave you all these chances and you couldn't handle it and whatever. That's all you had to do. Now I'm here at NXT trying to build another you, and I'm doing it for the people. I have to go to work with this stupid tie on and this jacket. Don't like, and it's people that can relate, like, you know, doing a job that they really don't want to do, but doing it for the good of everything else. It's like he's doing it for the good of the people. And he's doing it because he want to listen to his wife, because his wife's saying, you know, you're not the guy anymore. Leave that alone. Like, he's Michael Corleone. Like, you know, I just want to live the corporate life and build for the future. And you keep, you know, pushing my button. You just keep on keeping on. And now you're threatening my kids. So enough is enough. And it's funny where when the promo started, people weren't cheering for Triple H. By the time it ended, people were, and Laredo's not necessarily like a smarty art wrestling town like that. They tend to be kind of, you know, standard, we cheer the good guys, boo the bad guys type thing. And up until the fact when Samoa Joe came out, you're thinking, okay, like, Triple H, he's standing up to Seth Rollins, which is ass backwards, but it is what it is. But to see Samoa Joe come out and just beat him up like a hired hitman, and Michael Cole going on saying, like, Samoa Joe represents the essence of NXT and everything NXT stands for, and the crowd is cheering for Joe, and it's kind of like we're in the Twilight Zone.
Well, don't forget that during a feud with Triple H and Randy Orton, Triple H went to Randy Orton's house. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And he threw Randy Orton through a window, or his fake house and wife and all that. So it's like, all right, so there's a precedent, which that makes it kind of funny to me that, you know, Seth threatens to show up at their house, and it's like, oh, wait a minute, my husband did that. So you can actually take it seriously. Of course, they didn't play into that. But, Triple H talking, but you have to remember, this is the same company that the good guy Enzo has routinely been trying to get in some guy's wife's pants, even though he gets his ass beat. Then he comes back talking shit, gets beat up some more, and then has his friend do all his fighting for him. All the while, still talking junk to the wife and the husband. Like, what, you're the hero? Like, you're annoying. You should be the bad guy in this. So it is no surprise to me that Triple H, using common sense, really, would be the hero, finally. Like, I don't know.
I mean, I'm not too surprised because last week we were complaining how John Cena cut an awesome heel promo, but the problem was that he's a babyface. Uh-huh. And now this week, Triple H is cutting an awesome babyface promo, even though he's supposed to be the heel. And it's kind of like, this isn't the first time this thing has happened. Is it still funny seeing like playoff and it's like, you know, Triple H didn't become Triple H for a reason? And people wonder, like certain fans wonder, like, people still like Triple H, people still popular. I'm like, Joel Embiid's like the rookie from the Sixers. He's like the big, he's going to probably win rookie of the year. And he came out on Twitter, basically said, you know, he put like a Twitter, Instagram post after they won a game. And it's like play choking the point guard. I learned this from Triple H. Like, Triple H is my favorite wrestler. This guy grew up in Cameroon. Just think about that. And he's like, you know, and then Triple H, you know, tweeted back at him saying, you know, you got to work on your form, but trust the process, blah, 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 blah. And then the next game, when they're doing the player introductions, Joel Embiid comes out and does the Triple H water spit and has Triple H theme music playing in the background at the stadium.
Okay, I saw that. I know who that guy was. I don't follow basketball. Yeah. So.
Yeah. So it's just, it's like there are people who really like Triple H. Like, because if you look at the Attitude Era, he outlasted everybody. Yeah. Like, you know, he doesn't wrestle full time, but he's still around. He still looks kind of the same besides the haircut. So people have fond memories of that. People like tough. He's like, you know, badass in a suit. Like, I'm wearing a suit. And that whole NXT stuff helps, where I've made the jokes, you know, he's CrossFit Paul Heyman, where he's changed NXT to this thing, like a sanitized, cleaner, better version of ECW. All of the, you know, positive things, if when you see the Kevin Owenses of the world and the Samoa Joes and Nakamura's and stuff, it's like a lot of that's because of Triple H. Fans like that. So I'm not surprised for Triple H to get goodwill from that.
And, well, I guess we'll get into that portion. I don't disagree with you, but we'll get into that portion another time. I think that I was explaining to the wife, Triple H is a good guy. And, like, in all sense, he is a good guy now. But yet, they, and him and Stephanie, to be honest, with all of, and I know they always say, well, that's our character, being the bad guy. It's like, okay, it's enough of that. But it's just weird to me how they're the face of a company, but then they're bad guys on TV. And it's like, it doesn't make any sense. But
you know what's weird, though, you bring that up? Stephanie comes off as the bad guy on TV, but Triple H doesn't. Like, Triple H is more like, you know, I'm avenging wrongs that stuff happened. Because even the stuff with Roman Reigns, it's kind of like Roman Reigns will be the good guy, but the way they built it up is like Triple H came to the Royal Rumble, handled business himself, tossed out Roman Reigns, and won the title. Like, he came off as, like, you know, Conan. I'm getting off my throne and picking up my sword one last time. And people cheer for badasses. Like,
yes.
That's the biggest thing. You've said it all the time. We've said it. Like, he can cut all the evil promos and snarky from all he wants, but he carries himself as like this old man badass that can still swing his sword if he needs to, and people like that. That's always been a trope in society that people have put on a pedestal.
And if we keep going, all we're going to do is talk wrestling. But the big news out of all this is Seth Rollins is hurt again. The same knee he hurt before. He's out 6 to 8 weeks, which puts his WrestleMania match in jeopardy now. And I'm just thinking,
it's not 4 to 6 months.
Like, yeah, but still, is that even luck? It looked harmless enough. All he did was get taken to the ground, and that's nothing.
Yeah, he just pointed his foot wrong. Like, it, injuries have happened from, you know, it's simple stuff can cause injuries. Like, even when, think about when he did the power bomb when he first hurt his knee. It didn't look that serious. It just looked like he just planted wrong. And just sometimes planting wrong can just lead to a lot. But the thing about the body is you can do a lot to strengthen your muscles. To a much smaller extent, you can do certain things to strengthen your bones. You really can't do anything with your ligaments except for being careful. Like, your ligaments are what they are. And the only thing you can really do is either fight a safe, low impact style like The Rock used to and how The Miz does now, or hope and pray. Because, you know, we've seen Triple, you know, we've seen people get injured like Vince McMahon blew out both of his legs just running to the ring.
Yeah.
You know, Batista, like we've seen people blow out tendons and tear muscles from jogging or, you know, stuff like that. We've seen people, you know, Neville, I think, when he broke a foot or broke his ankle doing like a slide and drop kick.
Yeah.
And just
no, it was sliding out of the ring, wasn't it?
Yeah, like he was doing like an apron drop kick, like he was sliding out the ring doing like the regular drop kick they always do. And sometimes things just go wrong. And I was watching it, and then they showed the replay. And it's like, okay, he stepped wrong. It didn't seem like that big a deal, but it doesn't take a whole lot. But I did laugh when Samoa Joe posted on Twitter saying, you know, I did what you asked Triple H. Like he was like a movie.
So awesome. Smug.
Yeah, like he's basically like a movie hitman. And it's funny in retrospect how perfect a fit it is, you know, because think about it. Seth Rollins was the original, you know, like he said, the guy they got out of NXT. You build the Shield around him. You break up the Shield. You make him the guy because he's like this future, you know, modern day 21st century WWE superstar where he has the look. He has, the high ability. Like, you can build something about him. He just happened to get hurt on something fluky. And ever since then, it's been this whole thing like, you know, I got jobbed out of something and I didn't do anything wrong. I want payback. And then you got somebody, Samoa Joe, that's been, you know, struggling in NXT for close to 2 years, should have been on the main roster this season. And you see this pretty boy complaining about getting a chance. And he just like, I should have been had a chance. Like, I've done more before I even got to WWE than you did now. And I'm hearing you complain. So, yeah, when Triple H six him on them, yeah, that's like a perfect fit because they like two different sides of the same coin, more or less.
Yeah, and it helps that I always hesitate to say stuff like this, but this is a compliment. Samoa Joe is a scary-looking man. Like, he looks the part. He looks like a legitimate mean dude. He may not be, but there's nothing about him that says soft. Anyway, well, his body. Well, yeah, you're hitting as hard as you can, yeah, like he can, you can be a big tub of shit if you want. I'm not saying he is, but, you know.
Yeah. Like you said, here's the thing about Samoa Joe. People think because he doesn't have abs that he's some fat slob. Like, no. Uh-huh. That's a solidly built man. Like, he looks like he could kill you in 15 seconds if he want to. Like, that's, you know, some people just look different. Like, Brock Lesnar looks like a damn monster. Like, some people are just, like, built a certain way.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how Samoa Joe looks like. Even when he wears a suit, it's like, I'm crossing the street. I'm not messing with, like, he can be, you know, work at the Salvation Army on his spare time for all we know. With that, when he has his face all frowned up and he just give me that look, the way he's, like, he doesn't have to be 6'6". Like, he's not necessarily a tall man, but he's a big, wide, like, walking oak tree. That can move and that can fight. Like, he's not just some guy like just fat laying on you. Like, no, he's a big guy that can move, that could out wrestle you, choke you out, and just punch your face off your body.
Which is what I'm sure that's what they were going with the whole Seth Rollins feud with him. Well, that's shot now, unfortunately. But yeah, I'm glad to see him up there. Just Raw's really crowded now, and SmackDown could sure shit use some people, but. I
thinking eventually they'll get Nakamura or somebody. You know the weird thing about this is, this probably the person that probably benefits the most out of this is Samoa Joe. Because think about it, the original plan was Seth Rollins at Triple H at Mania. Well, if that's going to happen, that means Seth Rollins would have probably had to beat Samoa Joe at Fastlane, and then you would have heard complaints like, you know, you got this monster, his first big match he loses. Like the same, like basically the same complaint that happened with AJ Styles at Mania when he lost to Jericho, even though it turned out well for Jericho. Look at it, this now it's kind of like, you know, Samoa Joe came in, put Seth Rollins out on the shelf. Ain't nobody, you know, Triple H Hitman came out and put him out first night.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody messing with him. He doesn't have to take the Fastlane loss. It's like, that's, so even though it changes the Mania plans, it puts wind under the sails of Samoa Joe big time.
Yeah, and that's what I'm hoping happens Monday, is he comes out, you know, and Triple H, Triple H introduce him, whatever, but then Triple H just goes, the floor is yours, and Joe just spouts off. I mean, all these guys are friends. I mean, I think Tyler Black back then, but Seth Rollins and Joe were in at the same time. Pretty sure they even faced each other. So it's not like they're strangers to each other. I'm not going to say they're friends, I guess, but, you know, so obviously it's not malicious. So, like, that tweet, that killed me. I was like, oh, my God. So, I mean, you know it's all product. So, like, behind the scenes, I'm sure there was some communication, obviously. God, I would hope so.
Yeah, they wouldn't let him tweet something like that, you know, bro. Because you can tell when certain people, and I'm talking about the Revival, tweet certain things, you can tell stuff they're not supposed to tweet, because then a whole bunch of people tweet telling them, like, cut that shit out, or you're going to be NXT for the rest of your life. So, yeah, Samoa Joe tweet, especially considering, like, he could have put – he didn't get blamed for the injury because it's kind of like, you know, stuff happens in wrestling. But yeah, it's like one of the big matches of WrestleMania might be down the toilet. You wouldn't tweet about that unless you had permission to tweet about it.
Yeah, well,
and
yeah,
the fact that and the fact that he tweeted about it is kind of like, you know, I'm bragging about putting you on the show. Just, you know, using a real life scenario to build up a storyline when it's done effectively is always, always awesome.
And that's where they're going. And I kind of now, I mean, just for the fact that this happened, I kind of want to see Joe and Rollins more so than I do Triple H and Rollins. But, whatever. But, so yeah, so WrestleMania plans up in the air or still going forward, depending on who you listen to or read. So, you know. One real last quick wrestling thing. SmackDown, when they had the tag team gauntlet, were you expecting Revival to show up? Not the gauntlet, excuse me, but when they called out any team, were you expecting Revival to show up?
Yeah, I did. Okay. Until I went on Twitter and heard one of them laughing about it. Okay. And then it's kind of like, it's weird because they made a big point, kind of like, you know, they won the titles and they don't, since they're doing their own thing, they don't have anybody to fight. Like, you saw the teams that ran out. Besides the Usos, you got a bunch of flotsam. Like, yeah. No offense to, well, I'm sorry, Vault Villains and, you know, Mr. I Got Kids, Heath Slater, and The Ascension, and Breezango. Like, just even saying those names, it's like, You have people that can wrestle, but you don't really care about anybody besides American Alpha and, to a small extent, the Usos. The rest of them can go somewhere.
Well, the problem is the Ascension, they came up, they should have been fine. Just two badasses went out there and mauled people, but as soon as they came out, they were making fun of them. Like, their debut, they were being made fun of, going back to Raw.
Yeah,
it was,
and
like,
it
why the hell
did
you pull these guys up then? That makes no sense.
And then it didn't help when they were cutting promos, like these goofy promos, you know, we're better than Demolition would ever be, The Road Warrior, the Hart Foundation was overrated, and all this stuff. And it's like, it's kind of like they don't fit the time frame. Like, they're old school tag team that kind of fit like the 80s or even like the mid 90s. And it's just like the Vault Villains, but if you have to be careful about pushing them. It's hard when you have like modern tag teams like the Usos are modern. They do old school tag team wrestling, but they have a modern look.
Yeah.
And like American Alpha is like basically Team Angle 2.0. Like, just a better version of each of those guys. So you can pull stuff off like that. Like, the Revival wrestle an old school 97 style, but they have it a way where it works in 2017. You can't be like this old school gimmick wrestling the old school gimmick style and then cutting goofy old school gimmick promos around new people. You're just going to come off looking corny. And that's like the Ascension. It weren't like the Ascension were like, you know, world beaters to begin with, but they didn't do them any favors.
No, but so I just wanted to ask that. And so let's get into the TV shows in case we lost everybody already. Like I said, I didn't see Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., although I think the second half of the season has been pretty damn good. Like we've said before, it is a shame no one's watching that show, or at least the audience has dwindled because of time frame, lack of interest, whatever. Because I think this season's been pretty good.
Yeah, like, it's been just a steady ride. And the degree of difficulty, considering the first half of it was incorporating Ghost Rider, a show like S.H.I.E.L.D., which Marvel really didn't do the supernatural, you know, stuff until this year with them, even because Doctor Strange wasn't even out yet. So, and this helped lead to Doctor Strange. And then the second half of it has been the whole LMD thing. It's kind of like, it could have easily been a downgrade because how awesome the Ghost Rider stuff was, but it hasn't been. Because one thing about S.H.I.E.L.D. is, once it got to a certain point, it does not waste time with filler episodes. It keeps stuff moving. Like, we move from A to point B, and the next episode we move from point B to point C. None of that, you know, we take 3 or 4 episodes to set up a storyline. They have an overarching storyline, but they keep it moving every second, and that's to their benefit.
Yeah, and all right, yeah, I haven't seen this week's, so I can't really comment, but the whole, you know what, never mind. So let's just go on to Arrowverse, and then once I watch, I'll ask you. If it's off the air, it's off the air, but all right.
You mean Oliver Wick, as you called him?
Yes, yeah, let's start with Arrow last night, recording this Thursday, obviously. Boy, I mean, not that it was a bad scene, don't get me wrong. That's an efficient way of getting rid of people, but boy, oh boy, someone watched John Wick, either director, stunt coordinator, whoever. Somebody definitely has seen John Wick a few times. Which, by the way, I have a copy of Blu-ray on my coffee table now, so I can finally make the wife watch it before we go next week and see the sequel. I'm not sure how much you're going to need to know going into this one, so I want to make sure we're all caught up. Besides being the John Wick, scene, Oliver Wick, I know Oliver's killed people as Green Arrow. I know in the first few seasons and the flashbacks he's killed people, but it seemed like out of
necessity.
That's the word I was going to use. I almost want to use
desperation, like the last resort thing. And yeah,
now it's just he's killing people left and right, and just because he wants to, or like just because. Well, yeah, because he wants to, and. The whole scene, he's just shooting guys dead. Then he goes and beats the guy to death with his gun. And I'm sitting there going, wow, this is, Oliver's a horrible person. And it's like, I understand that he's trying to make amends for it now, even though he's gone back to killing people again, which they've routinely mentioned. But I don't remember a superhero, maybe Captain America, the Punisher, I guess. At least Captain America was a soldier. And Punisher's just a psycho.
But even in Captain America, like, you remember the movies, like, he killed people, but you really didn't see him kill people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, think about it. You see him shooting a gun, but whenever he's attacking people, he's always shield-based. Like, you know he killed people because he blew up a tank, and you didn't see everybody escape the tank. But you didn't actively, like, see him shoot somebody, falls down, because it's like that Marvel bloodless violence that they love doing. And this one, it's not just he's shooting people. He's shooting them and then double-tapping a few of them.
Yeah.
Like, I'm watching that scene, and he, you know, he goes, within, 4 seconds, he shoots, 7 people.
Yeah.
And it's just, and it fits the character, because you, considering, we're on season 5, and you wonder, well, why is he like that in season 1? Like, when they talked about early in the season, he was walking around like a damn serial killer. You wouldn't think about that from a superhero that was, because even Batman comes off as a madman, but he didn't really kill anybody. Up until the DC movies recently, his whole thing is the non-kill thing. So to see somebody
kill people in Batman Returns.
His whole ethos was, it's kind of like people got upset at Batman doing that because for the longest Batman didn't do stuff like that. So to see somebody like Oliver Queen, we made a joke saying, you know, he's just Batman that enjoys sleeping with women more. Just actively murder people without any issues is striking. And not only fact, I think it's the fact that his gun, I noticed that with this episode, not even just him, and it's something that's funny. I don't like Wild Dog. I know a lot of people don't like him. And one thing that always stand out up until this episode, he's always walking around with guns. He always is missing.
Yeah, he sucks. Yeah.
Up until this episode, then all of a sudden, he's gunning down people too, and it's kind of like, oh, I guess that's what this whole episode is like. Everybody decides to okay, I'm just leading the way, you know. And the fact that you see the whole, I'm guessing that's what we unmanned helicopter, which will just, you know, although that's suspending a whole lot of disbelief, because otherwise it's kind of like He blew up a helicopter with how many people in it and did the badass walk away from the explosion. It's like, yes, Oliver Queen is no longer Batman. Oliver Queen is the Punisher that cosplay that cosplays as the mayor during the daytime.
I don't know, man. It like Wild Dog.
I'm not even complaining. It's just weird.
I've liked this season of Arrow better than last because at least it's like one strong, like one thing's going on. Even though you know why they're in the search for a new Black Canary in the middle of Prometheus running around. Okay, I guess whatever. I actually really enjoyed the scenes when they were at the diner. When it was Oliver, Curtis, what the hell is...
Renee.
Okay, it is Renee. Alright. I was going to say Renee Montoya, but that's not who that is. But I actually enjoyed those scenes because for once they were just sitting there talking. They were out of uniform, costume, whatever. They weren't in the middle of a fight. They weren't arguing in the Arrow Cave. Whatever they're calling it. I thought it was kind of refreshing seeing them just sitting around talking and Oliver getting all over Renee's case about eating a triple cheeseburger or double cheeseburger, whatever it was. And he's like, it's just gross. And it's like, you eat your own, mind your own business. Or, I mean, if you're paying for it, I guess you can say whatever you want, but damn. I don't know. I like that interaction. I liked how they slowed some stuff down a little bit. But I still don't get why in the middle of Prometheus, you know.
Well, I think it was kind of where Laurel 2.0 showing up kind of like spurred him to action. Because remember, he was. And then it was the fact of that, and then the Artemis leaving. I think it was a combination of the two. Kind of remind, like, you know, I did make a promise to Laurel, and first Artemis bounces, so it can't be her. And then I see an evil Laurel come in. And I still got feelings, but it can't be hurt. Like, I still feel guilty about how my Laurel died, and it's affecting with this one. So, it's like, it kind of spurred the moment. And it's funny because it was funny how that episode played out because, you know, she's a metahuman. They've always been this whole, like, we don't want to do metahuman stuff on Arrow this season because it's kind of like we're trying to get the basis of, like, season one and season two. And seeing her, you know, basically. She's murdering people too, and you see her, you know. And it's the whole like Deadpool scene, talking like, you know, if you be a real hero, you can walk away and not be consumed by revenge. And she like, yeah, whatever, kills me. Anyway, but then shows up like 5 minutes later. Is like, okay, I guess I can be on your team. And he's like, cool. I was just laughing because it's kind of like superhero shows. Normally, stuff like that happens. It's like, I hope I never see you, and if I do, I gotta hunt you down. And this one is like. Well, I've done it too, so yeah, whatever.
I think this is kind of the problem with Arrow that I have. There's almost too many side. Like, what happened to Quentin? They just sent him to rehab, and that was it.
Him and Thea on a cruise somewhere because somebody made a joke on Twitter had her on a milk carton. Like,
yeah.
Have you seen Thea Queen? They have a cast. And I think people made the complaint saying they pushed aside like Diggle and Thea and Quentin yep. for these new people and
that aren't engaging, to be honest.
Yeah, it's like, you know, yeah, like the new people. Oh, I'm kind of indifferent. I'm fine with the old one, especially considering we've grown up with them and everything. And yeah, like the new. You know, Black Canary, and I know they gave her original name. Shout out to that. Well, not laughed at it. Like, I'm not a DC fan, but I caught that name when they bust that, the importance of it. Like, her is fine. Ragman, I guess he's like the moral conscious. Curtis seems redundant with Felicity around. Yep. Renee can go kick rocks. As far as I'm concerned, like, he can go back where he came from. And it's funny where the new character I like the most is the DA.
Yes.
Because you don't see that. Like, normally you don't see that character being. He's almost like, you know, Harvey Dent without. He's like a calmer Harvey Dent. Like, he's got an edge to him, but it's like he's a good guy DA. Like, you're waiting for the other shoe to drop, but you're not used to, like, a government official, like, a city official working with the good guy mayor, and they're on the same team working together.
Yeah.
Like, normally, like, you know, I know something's up with this guy. I'm going to try to hunt down Oliver Queen, see what the deal is.
Yep. You're killing me. So, yeah, no, you're exactly right, though. I think Curtis is not redundant, obviously, but also he's not interesting. This is going to sound bad, but the most interesting aspect was his sexuality, because you don't see a lot of gay married superheroes. And they were like, nope, that guy's out of the picture. And they just dropped him, and it was like, well, I don't really want to see some genius learning the ropes when I've already got a female genius learning the ropes in the cave. Like,
who might be going down the evil route.
Yeah.
Which is funny too. I mean, that's the whole thing. I'm not even complaining without, at least they're doing something with Felicity and they keep her away from Oliver.
Yeah.
Which is fine. And, you know, Diggle's out of jail so he can go back doing what. I have the feeling that season six is going to, like, season five has been fine. People have been talking about how good the season's been because it's fixed a lot of problems. Mm-hmm. I got a feeling like season six is going to look different. Like, some people shaved off, some of those new people.
I get a feeling by the end of the season, I think some of them are going to go. But the one thing that we're getting robbed of right now with Mr. Terrific is I keep comparing him to the comic character, which I know is not fair, but the comic character is a confident dude. He has, you know, his intellect, whatever. I love how they always rank comic, like, he's the fourth smartest man in the DC universe. Like, what?
It was some test somebody took. Like, I always laugh at that, too. Like, you know, Batman is the third highest ranked, you know, martial artist in DC universe. Like, what, he was in Bloodsport and got to the semifinals? Like, how did they determine that?
Yeah, no, that's exactly. So, and he was also, like, a real Olympian, not whatever Curtis was. But which I know is obviously undercutting, you know, undercutting feats of Olympic strength or whatever. But they keep saying he was an Olympian. You're like, you were?
What sport? Like archery or something like it? Because that's the whole thing.
Even archers are badasses, dude. So. Yeah,
but he doesn't seem, that's the whole thing. Like, he doesn't seem athletic. They mentioned Olympic, but he doesn't seem athletic.
No.
And he just comes off as like a nerdy goofball with a crisis of confidence. And I don't like him. Like,
no,
it keeps feeling like he's taking time away from Diggle and Felicity. And that's, and I'm not like the biggest Felicity fan, but I'd rather have her use his time and be done. Like, he was cool when he was like the sidekick. He was the Felicity fanboy. You see him every now and then, but him on the team just does not fit.
Yeah. I always figured Curtis was just going to turn into the tech guy. He was going to create stuff out of her, kind of like Cisco does. But instead, it's... I don't know. It just is what he is, and I don't care.
What?
Like, I'm waiting for the T... Like, they tease the T-spheres. And if he starts using those make him way more interesting. They will make him more interesting, but I don't know. It may be... It's not metahuman, obviously, but it may be too close to that. So, yeah.
It's one thing I did like we didn't talk about, and I was surprised. Talia al Ghul, like, she, mm-hmm. There's something about. It's funny because normally when you do the whole Batman thing, she always gets the limelight, and Nissa's more to the background. And Arrow did a reverse where Nissa got the limelight, and we both seen how Katrina Law looks. So it's kind of like. Nobody was complaining. She kind of got a lot of story time in like a couple seasons. So when they announced having Talia, it's like, that seems weird. But they had her, like, you know, she just can't. It's funny how she came off more like Ra's al Ghul than Ra's al Ghul did.
Okay.
Like, just the way she carried herself and everything, like, you know, she was on her, like, she didn't break a sweat. She was on her stuff. The fact that she trained Yao Fei, and I was like, he's like, you know, 30, 40 years older than you. And she's kind of like, you know, never guess a woman's age. And like, you know, it's a family secret about the whole age thing. Like, we know who she is, but Oliver doesn't. Like, Oliver knows her first name. He doesn't know her last name. Or you know, I don't even know the whole thing. And at that point, I don't, you know, how much does he know about the League of Assassins? Like, I'm not sure if, you know, the time frame is he knows about them or how that works. So, and then the look she had when he was beating that dude to death was like, yeah, she gonna show up again. And it's just wondering, like, how that plays out. And I've liked these flashbacks this season, because it's built into, like, it's almost like it builds into the stuff showing, like, more how Oliver Queen became Oliver Queen, especially at the end when you have him rocking the hood and having the arrow and everything. It's like, oh, how about that?
And then he starts making fun of a bow and arrow. Like, wait, what? So, and I know it's just part of the, I don't know. Like, I guess this is a part where we learn about how he becomes the hood, you know. But the backstory scene didn't really, this background scene doesn't seem to match so far.
I think it's going to lead into the present, like the way, because it's the whole, we always had the questions, like me and you, you know, they talked about stuff on the island, they talked about some stuff with Deathstroke and everything, and then last season was like, okay, how did Damian Dark use magic, and that one was basically for that, even though it was dull as dishwater, but it was like, remember season one, he's walking around with a Russian tattoo, like, you know, yeah, I'm part of the Russian mob.
Yeah, true.
And they talked about it like every now and then, but they never, okay, like, how the hell did he join the Russian mob? And now we're watching that, and one, we got to see Dolph Lundgren be a badass.
Yeah,
which definitely helped, and, like, you know, a grizzled, you know, badass. And then you see, like, the moral conflict with him, like, even walk around saying, "I'm a monster," and you're not used to. It's funny where it fits his character because we've seen that, but it's weird him saying that. Like, you're not used to superheroes saying that. Yeah, people. And that's what I'm afraid of. I'm not afraid of not killing people. I'm afraid of enjoying killing people because it came easy. And, like, we saw that the more we've seen the flashbacks, the easier seeing him kill people. Which, by the time season one starts off and he's hitting the city, oh, no wonder he's just gunning everybody down. And that's why when they had the flashback early in the season, when you see him and you talked about saying, you forgot how vicious Oliver used to be season one. Like, mm-hmm. He's gunning people in their throat with a bow and arrow, and it's not a damn flesh wound.
So, to move on from Arrow, I don't have a lot to say about Flesh because he's barely the focal point of the show anymore since they started making Kid Flash a thing. I still don't like Wally. I don't care what they're trying to do with this kid.
You don't like young people.
No, well, that's true, but I really, I don't, well, everyone on the show is young except for Wells, but I don't know. It's, something's not clicking right. I've been trying to put my thumb on it.
You know what it is?
And just he's, nothing.
You know he is? You remember Derek Strokes? You remember Sam, the little white kid?
Is that what he is?
And yes. Is like, reverse different strokes? It's not that the fact that he's just young. He's precocious. He's like young, you know, I'm mad at my mom because she left me, and I'm racing illegal cars, and I got a grudge against my dad. Like, he has, like, his stuff is real issues, but it's like high school, college issues. And everybody else is like young adult issues. Like, Cisco's thing this year is my brother died. You know, Caitlin's thing is I might turn into a villain. Like, I already lost a husband and a boyfriend. Like, they've done grown people stuff. Iris is walking around thinking she's going to die in 4 months. We don't even got to talk about Barry and his messed up family structure or, you know, Joe. Like, they deal with grown, like, not say old, but they're adults. They don't like grown adult stuff. And Wally stuff to seem, you know, and the fact that, you know, he's young and handsome and he just got this. Young people are irritable to old people for a lot of reasons. And it's funny, like, people seem to have the same reaction to Wally, almost how they feel about Laurel, where Laurel got a lot of people's nerves. And it was just the fact where it was kind of like she was the stick in the mud. She's complaining about how stuff's not fair, and she wouldn't have fun. Like, Thea was, you know, was Paris Hilton, basically a pill-popping addict trying to figure out life. Oliver walking around murdering people. Diggle was cool, and everybody else was like grizzled grown-ups. And Laurel was like that whiny ex-girlfriend that was like an 8, mad that she's not a 10. And she was written that way, so she got on people's nerves, especially when Felicity was Miss the cool hacker girl that can fill out a skirt. Wally is taking time away from Barry. Like, Barry's whole thing is,
yeah,
I had to work hard to get this fast. And then Wally, it's almost, to use the whole coaching thing, it's like Barry is a coach son, and he had to work hard and give 110% and use learn his fundamentals and blah blah blah. And then Wiley just come in within a week. I'm faster than you, to the point where you're gonna have to save hours because I'm not gonna be good enough. And I know that has to. I mean, comic wise, it makes sense. But I know if you're watching the show, that's going to rub certain people the wrong way. It's like, oh, this young punk is going to come in, and he's just going to take his spot because reasons.
I mean, that's kind of what it seems like. Like, are they out of ideas for Barry all of a sudden? So now they're going to give Wally, like, I understand in the comics, Barry dies during Crisis. Wally takes over and became a better Flash. That's just how it. I don't care what anyone says. Wally West in the comics, the original, is way better than Barry Allen ever was. But in this, it's like we've barely gotten to know Barry Allen. This is only season 3, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of the Arrow thing. All the focus is now going on Wally about how he's faster and there's this and there's this. And then I'm like, well, I don't care. Like, I didn't sign up to watch the Kid Flash show. And I understand this. I know this is going to lead somewhere, and he'll probably end up losing his seat or getting slower than Barry, whatever.
Because
in the comic, once he used it too much, it made him sick, and they got rid of that. But so I'm wondering if that's what's going to happen here.
Yeah, people have to guess that he may end up being Savitar somehow. Like people been wondering about that. I mean, the thing with the Flash is the heroes, like, they have a family thing. Like, the hero camaraderie is awesome. Like, you know, bickering families still get along, and that was the whole joke part. The problem comes in is conflict. Like, we're on season 3, and for the third straight season, it's like, it's somebody that's fast. I'm thought I was the fastest man alive, so I ran to somebody faster than me, and now I got to figure out to be faster than him so I can be the fastest man alive. And it's only so many ways you can tell that story without kind of getting, like, change your tune.
Mm-hmm.
And it's tough. Like, that's always – because, you know, the Rogue thing, they treat, like, villain of the week. They use some of them, like – the CGI budget is nice, but, you know, I'm sure Grodd will show up sooner or later, but that's just going to be one episode. You know, King Shark is awesome, but you could probably show him for like 6 minutes based on how much money you got. Mm-hmm. MacBook Pro, 1 zillion, or anything like that. So the rest of the guys, like, okay, it's a guy with a gun, or it's a guy that can grow tall, or a guy that can slow down time, or throw glue, or something like that. And it's like, yeah, like, it's tough to have a conflict. Like, usually Barry's biggest enemy has been himself making rash, stupid decisions because he's been selfish. And I think maybe this is a case of him trying to not be selfish and realize. I think this is kind of the way the season's leading, is him allowing himself to trust his friends and put, even though it's like, you know, he loves Iris, he doesn't want Iris to die, but Julian made the great point. You're not going to be good enough to do it. So if you want to save him, it's going to have to be Wally. And season 1 and 2, Barry ain't doing it. He's like, I'm going to go back in time. I'm going to start earlier. He'd have done something stupid like that. So the fact that he's actually, how this episode ended is like, that's what they call character growth. It's not a lot, but it's I'd rather him take a step forward than a step backwards like he has been doing.
I think another problem with Wally, not to discount anything you said, it's taken away from Joe. Because we're always going to have those scenes in Star Labs. But Joe's barely been on the last few episodes. And when it is, it's just as a concerned father. That's it. And they mentioned last night, or not last night, but this last week, the girlfriend was there. And I was like, hey, Joe. I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot about you. Because, well, we're too busy worried about Wally now. But like I said, I know it's my own problem. I need to give it a chance because there's probably a storyline reason for this. But he's annoying. Like, I don't know if he's up there with the current Arrow people. Like, I don't know. Maybe that's the thing. And it worked okay when there was the big crossover, which is something I wanted to mention. We're not going to have time for Gotham, but I really enjoyed the Cisco Gypsy fight because it went to different places. They ended up going to Catco, which was, you know, funny. When they were bouncing around, I was really hoping that they would bounce around and have something that looked like Gotham in the background. Like the show, the way they shoot that Gotham show, which I'm not sure they, you know, I guess
I think it
was a parody? Satire?
I mean, yeah, because I don't, it's funny where I don't know how the licensing works with that. Like, yeah. It's all DC, but they're not all together. So
and it's also
I'm
Fox.
Thinking they,
it's a Fox show.
Yeah.
But then I was hoping, like, they would have something to where it looked like the DC Universe movies. Like, whether they show up in, I don't know, make it look like Batman's cave from Superman Batman. Just to give, like, that little wink, like, hey, this is all connected somehow. But, again, I don't know if they were allowed to do that. I thought that would have been really cool.
Yeah, I don't
cool.
think
so.
And it's funny where it shows, like, you know, you don't, it's funny how Cisco's powerful, but you only know that because when you see people who actually know how to use the power, like, she came in and mopped the floor with all of them, and she did it, like, without breaking a damn sweat. Like, she made a good point saying, you know, if I want to kill y'all, y'all be dead. You know, like, that whole, oh, she saw, like, normally people see a speedster, they don't know how to handle it. She, like, this all damn walking apart.
Like,
and
speedster, another one, yeah.
Yeah, like, it's funny seeing, you're not used to seeing, like the Flash and Kid Flash handled by non-speedsters like it's no big deal, and she handled them like it was no damn big deal. And the whole, I love how they have Cisco just loves these bad girls, and somehow the bad girls just hit, like, goofy old Cisco.
Yes.
Like, that's hilarious, and it's kind of like, it's funny that that's a character trope, and they go on Cisco for that, like, why are you always like this? And he's like, you know, I like what I like, it ain't my fault.
Well, this is the first time he openly hit on somebody, I believe, while they were fighting.
Yeah. And people,
it was like, alright, well, good for you. So,
need to talk about, for your Legends.
Yeah, let's go. Yeah, that's fine. Legends, that's where I was going next.
Yeah.
So.
I love that episode, because you want to know why? It's one of my favorite things. Villains being villains.
Yep. And we're on the same wavelength on this one.
Yeah. And it's funny, like, in, I remember talking to Camp. Somebody talked to him, like, you know, out the CW shows, if we're going to be, like, honest, like, as even as improved as Arrow's been, Legends is probably, like, the best as far as just having fun this season. And, yeah, because they just, when no other show could do that, because it's kind of like they have the advantage of these characters all have backstories that have been built up, so you know all of them. And they get to just be themselves and not have to, like, you know. It's funny, like, as cool as Damian Dark was on Arrow, he's way better on Legends.
Yeah.
And so is Reverse Flash. Like, I didn't think that much of Reverse Flash until now.
Yeah,
like,
this episode. I thought this episode made him, one, more humanized, but also a lot scarier than he was on Flash. And I understand that he was, like, taking over Wells' body, this and this, but I, surprisingly, like, there was almost a sympathy to him, but the problem is, it's not so sympathetic because, well, he was a jerk, well, a murderer, and the only reason he's running now is because, you know, they had to put a stop to his murderous ways by a guy committing suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're running from the Black Flash, which I was super hyped up to see, and just wondering how that's going to play in with the Flash now. So,
yeah, because I know Zoom, a.k.a. Black Flag, that actor, he's doing, I think, 24, like the new 24. But
yes.
He's told to come back. He's told to be coming back to The Flash, like, eventually, or come back to do CW stuff. But it's just funny, like, having them chew up scenery, and then the whole thing is like, you know, I know normally this is the part where we get at each other's necks, because that's, like, the whole villains can't trust each other. And then they do it anyway,
yep,
because they just have, they be like seeing Malcolm Merle and Damian Dark go each other neck, like, you know, Malcolm cracking him like, yeah, you talking all this stuff about my hand, but at least I'm alive.
Yeah, because he's basically dealing with two dead guys.
Yeah.
And which didn't really occur to me as I've been watching the show, like, wait a second. But no, I liked how they addressed some of the stuff. You don't know, like, I don't know if, well, Rip Hunter, obviously, they've pretty much established his mind is totally different, but now you don't know who he's working with inside the villains, because Merlin put a bug in his ear, Thawne comes in and says, all right, where's this? All right, this is what I want you to do. So now, I don't know where, like, if you want to say his allegiances lie, but where's it lie? Because there's like kind of a spectrum of what could happen, which I liked. I really enjoyed this week's episode, and I enjoyed it because of the villains, because it reminded me of, like, now not Super Friends so much, but like, you know, when they had Challenge of the Super Friends, the villains all sat around the table and bickered at each other, like who was going to go fight the superheroes. And this is kind of what it was like, and I
exactly.
enjoyed it.
And you never see that these type of shows or movies like hero centric.
Yeah,
because it's kind of like, you know, people are here for the hero. It's funny where all of those stuff is hero centric, but the best ones are the ones that have villains that people care about. And it's kind of like that's not an accident. Like, and spend more time. Like if you spend time, like the why Flash season one worked so much was because that Wells was an awesome ass villain.
Yeah.
Like he was, and like Arrow season two was, even Stephen Amell has said, like, I wish I could get definitely wish I could get Manu Bennett back. Like, I miss
him. Yes.
Yeah. Like, he was just such a, like, having badass villains makes everything better. Ward being on S.H.I.E.L.D. elevated S.H.I.E.L.D. Like,
yep.
So to see this, and you have three of them, and it's kind of like you get this, you know about them, you know how they think, and then it fleshes them out more because you're wondering, okay, like, why is, because they made a good point too. I was always wondering, Reverse Flash is a damn speedster. Most of these people on the show don't know how to do a speedster, so why does he need help? Yep. And that's the, and I was always wondering, like he can just run around, snap everybody's neck, and be done with it, and it's kind of like, if he can do all that, why does he need, like they say, why does he need henchmen? And it's funny how they talked about, like, you know, the thing about henchmen is that they always die at the end.
Mm-hmm. And, well, in a way, Damian Dark does end up dying, whether... I do wonder if Legends has a bigger purpose in that if one of the other shows messes up, like, the writers realize, yep, we messed something up, we gotta change this. If they can just have something happen in Legends and reset it, which I know is a very easy cop-out to fix anything, but I still wonder if that's a possibility coming down the road. But
it's funny how it's almost had the same issue, like we talk about with wrestling, because I guess we can wrap up soon, or we can talk about a movie then wrap up soon, how Raw and SmackDown are run by the same person, and they seem like two completely different shows.
Yeah.
And it's like, you look at the CW shows and yeah, like there are different levels, like very different levels of enjoyment with the shows, where I love watching Legends, and I like season one is kind of like I just watched it because it was something to watch, and some of those episodes were good, some not. Like, I love watching this season just because they just seen it as, you know what, the hell with the rules, we just gonna have fun, and we don't care how batshit insane is that. Like, you want to talk about Civil War zombies and slavery episode, let's do it. Like, stuff like that, like, you wouldn't even think about. Arrow has been much better because they basically, like, we're gonna take it back to the roots type thing. Supergirl is funny because it's kind of like, that's basically, I'll say Supergirl's acquired taste, you either like it or don't, and people either like it a whole lot or do not mess with it. I know you're on, like,
the, you know what I would like is if Supergirl wasn't hateable. That would be perfect.
But,
so,
hold up. You know the funny
thing
is? This
week drove me insane.
Yeah, but you know what it is? She all high and mighty. Ain't that Superman? Is she basically Superman?
Yeah, she's
Superman,
getting there, yeah.
Yeah, and it's kind of like, maybe Superman will be here to set her ass straight. Like, it can't be by accident. Like, they're doing that for a reason. Because, you know, she walk around like, I'm the only person that get to be a superhero because I got superpowers.
Or
damn.
I choose who,
like,
gets to. What?
And I can see where she's coming from. She just came off like an asshole, though. But, like, it's a way of saying your point in true Justin American way, not your damn dumb. You just walk around with Kevlar and a goofy-ass shield. You're going to get shot. Like, I can fly. And my boyfriend, that's better than you, can do that because we have powers and you don't, normie. So sit on the side. Like, it's just weird because that wasn't her in season one, but I think that's the point where the universe around her is changing, so it makes sense that she may react a certain way. Because even like season one, she didn't always react the right way. She is kind of on the young side experience. Wow, she kind of like, you know, the whole I'm learning stuff by the way and I always do the right thing, so it doesn't bother me that much. And I always laugh at the people say that Supergirl is basically turned into like lesbian propaganda, but that's neither here nor there. But and then Flash is just, it's almost where season one was fun, And the last two seasons have been more gritty and people sad and stuff, like, you know, like, and it's like, it's, that's not what Flash, that's not what people enjoy about Flash. And it's almost like, you know, shows need to change, but if it changes too much, it kind of alienates people. And that's, I think, what happened with Flash to a certain extent. Are you muting yourself?
Sorry about that. Yes. And that hasn't happened a long time, by the way. We'll talk about more about Supergirl next week, hopefully. We need to talk about, well, we'll push next week as well. Batman no longer has Ben Affleck as a director. We have a Aquaman Black Manta, finally. But you went and saw Split.
Yes, I did.
And, okay, major spoilers coming. Major spoiler coming.
Spoiler
so
alert.
So shut it off now. Thanks for listening. We'll talk at you next week. So Split's got pretty good reviews, and from, I did not see it, but from what I've read, people seem to really enjoy this movie outside of the twist at the end.
Yeah, and it's been number one 2 weeks in a row, and it's funny because it's like had a Blumhouse budget where we'll spend like $5 or $6 million,
good,
and it's made, yeah, it made what, $70-80 million already. So it's, yeah, like M. Night Shyamalan, his last two, like he has bounced back, like, you know, and that's, I know he was very polarizing, like he was great, then he was bad, he was horrible, and now he might be good again. So yeah, we went to see Split, and you know, we saw week two, and it was a full, like the theater was full, and it's funny where I was enjoying the movie, but there was a part of me that had a real ugly, like, about it, because it's basically, you know, you didn't see it, James McAvoy kidnaps three women because he's a guy that has multiple personality disorder. And it's like 23 of them. And you meet like four or five, and then it's the secret one that's like a monster. And they have the doctor there explaining how when people have with this disease, some of them can do certain things, like saying, you know, it's this one that had multiple personality, was able to lift a truck and blah, blah, blah. And you think like, okay, what kind of pseudoscience nonsense is this? And like, it is mumbo jumbo. And I've always had the feeling, because especially I work in a healthcare field, so I'm sympathetic to it, how when they make people with mental illness, they turn them into villains. Like, oh, he's not, like, they treat that like it's a, you know, oh, you're the bad guy because you're mentally ill. And that's kind of jacked up when you really think about it. Like, you know, if somebody had diabetes, that wouldn't make them a villain. You know, like Walter White wasn't a villain because he had cancer. Like Walter White became a villain because him trying to tear his family for him to have cancer led him to do villainous stuff. But it wasn't like the cancer cells turned him into a damn crazy man.
Yeah.
And with mental illness, they've always done that, like autism and schizophrenia and stuff. And people, like, that's the reason why people look at mental illness with that stigma. And I'm watching this movie, like, I'm enjoying the movie, but it's an uncomfortable movie, like, watching that. But it's kind of like enjoyable where, and then it's, you know, one of the girls, you kind of find out she was sexually abused by her uncle. So you're wondering like why she's the way she's acting, because the other two girls are like losing their mind. They don't know how to act and stuff. And she's all calm and stuff. And they show flashbacks. So it's like you got one guy that has all these multiple personalities that's like leading him to do stuff he shouldn't do. And then you got this one woman that's like she's supposed to be the hero because she overcame being molested by a family member that's still alive. And you're watching the movie, it's like, okay, it's one of those thrillers and everything. She's going to bounce back and find a way to end. And then two-thirds through the movie, you realize, no, this is not the type of movie you're watching. You are watching a supervillain origin story, because that story the doctor said about how, you know, multiple personality might lead to stuff, and one of his is, I'm going to become the Beast, and my skin gets hardened, and I can climb walls. So when he says that, like, in the movie, like, okay, he's just being delusional. And then you see him actually do this stuff. Like, you see the doctor goes to the house, and you see her stab him, and the knife breaks. You see James McAvoy climbing on walls, and you're like, what the hell just happened? Like, the girl, like, and then, spoiler alert, you're wondering, like, how the girls escaped. No. He eats two of the girls. Like, he murders them and eats them. and you see one body laid out with the stomach ripped out. You see him eating the other one, and you're wondering, like, what the hell is going on?
Is this movie rated R? I can't remember.
I don't know if it's PG-13 or R. It should be R.
That sounds R to me.
Yeah, so, and, you know, she's a shotgun and everything. She shoots him, like, 3 or 4 times, and he just shrugs it off. And he's about to kill her, because this whole thing is, the thing of the beast is, he kills, you know, the pure because they haven't been strengthened through pain and stuff. Hmm. And then he's about to do it to her and realize she's been abused. She has a whole bunch of scars on her. And it's like, oh, you've been through it. So he escapes. And then it's like, okay, find out that he works in the zoo. You know, the cops come, they get the girl, and it's like, he gets away. And I'm like, what? Like, you're not used to a movie, like, you're not used to a movie where the bad, like, the last one I remember, like, Silence of the Lambs, where the bad guy gets, even though Hannibal Lecter wasn't the main, he was, like, the main character, but he wasn't the main villain of the movie. You're not used to the villain getting away with, yeah, you know, after committing crime. So, all that happens and everything, and, you know, the credits run. And then all of a sudden goes to the diner and they're talking about it. And I'm starting to get this, because I'm wondering, like, how's this movie going to end? And they're talking about, oh, it's this one lady saying, oh, so they gave him the name of the beast. It's like, oh, it's like that guy that killed all those people with the train. His name was Mr. Such and Such. And then it starts to dawn on me because I remember who directed the movie. And who pops up but Bruce Willis playing his role from Unbreakable, saying, oh, yeah, they called him Mr. Glass. And then you just realize two things. One, we just saw a supervillain origin story. And two, somehow M. Night Shyamalan made a superhero movie universe under everyone knows this.
Mm-hmm. No one knew.
Nope, yeah. And I remember people saying the twist, like, it's this shocking and stuff. And I didn't see it, and I didn't read the twist and everything. And you know what's funny? If I had saw the twist before I watched the movie, I probably wouldn't have been as harsh on the movie as I was when I first watched it. Because it was an enjoyable movie, but it seemed kind of super exploitive. But no, now it's like, no, this isn't like real science and stuff. This is like superhero, supervillain stuff. And then you realize, like, you've seen something that you never seen before. Like, you wouldn't see a movie where it's the origin story of the Joker. And that the bad shows up. Like, because that's, you don't see that. Like, you don't see supervillains get a whole movie becoming supervillains. And now it's like, you get to see James McAvoy versus Bruce Willis in like a movie, like in a grounded movie universe thing. The Samuel Jackson shows up, you know, like this whole thing. And it's funny, I haven't mentioned James McAvoy. He acted his ass off. Like, I cannot stress how awesome he was. And because that, cause he, like playing those roles he played, it could have easily went off the rails. He could have played it for like caricature or like as a joke. And I never felt that. I felt like he was somebody thinking he was different people. When he was playing a woman, he wasn't doing overly feminine. He was just playing like it was a woman. He's a, like a germaphobe or an 8-year-old boy that loves Kanye West music and everything. Like, and it was scary. Like how I'm watching, like, people not, like, I knew he was a good actor. I didn't know he was like that good. Like, he has a way of, he can go through emotions very agile, and it doesn't seem like off-putting. Like, that's, he is mentally agile when it comes to acting, and kudos to him. Like, he was awesome in that, and I have to stress that. Like, I was impressed just watching it.
Well, it's because I had zero interest in seeing this movie, and just because of who directed it, and that's plain and simple. So once I will check my HD movie app, which still works, see if it's on there. I'll give it a spin. But, you know, I really enjoyed Sixth Sense. I really enjoyed Unbreakable, but it was after that. Like, I never saw Signs, but I saw The Lady in the Water, whatever that thing was, with Bryce Dallas Howard, and mm-hmm. then that unwatchable hunk of shit with Mark Wahlberg.
Oh, him as the teacher.
Holy
with the tree.
Where nature turns against the earth. Like, this is ridiculously bad. And that's the movie I've seen by him, because I didn't want to see anything. Oh, no, I take that back. I did try watching The Last Airbender. Garbage. And then I didn't see the Will Smith one because I didn't care.
Thank God you didn't. So, it's funny. I saw Unbreakable first. That's, and I really enjoyed that. Yeah, it's a good movie, and it's like a slow burn too. Like, it's a good movie, but you gotta, you know, like, you're not like, that's a movie where the twist is kind of like, whoa, I remember liking, okay, this is cool. Like, Bruce Willis, Samuel Jackson, they're going to work together as a team. And you realize Samuel Jackson's a damn madman. Like, which kind of fit when you really watch the movie, but you don't. It's kind of funny where in the beginning, his whole thing was for a twist. They fit the movie once you thought about it, so it wasn't a twist for the sake of being a twist.
Right.
And then later, it just became that, like, I didn't see signs. The village I saw, it was okay. It wasn't bad. It was okay. I didn't see Little Order Happening.
Oh, The Happening.
So Last Edward, and I heard how he butchered that, so I stayed away from it. I saw After Earth, and that was just wretched. And then the one, like, Devil was okay. But then I saw The Visit.
Well,
like,
he was only a producer. He didn't direct that.
But then I saw The Visit, and I liked that one. Like, that was a good old school. It's kind of like his thing is, he's like a genre director where he has a specific style. Like, he knows how to. It's almost like the whole thing, like Michael Bay and to a certain extent Zack Snyder, where they know how to use camera and sound, like, very well. It's the story that kind of trips them up. And I think with him, he's kind of reined it in with the story. Like, you know, he tells a story, and, like, now it's more streamlined. But I never felt like even though when stuff seemed ridiculous, he sticks to it. Like, he does it with conviction. So I never felt like, you know, I'm being laughed at.
Yeah.
At least with that. Like, you know, I could see myself, even though it was kind of like a touchy thing, and if it's not handled the right way, it could be a mess. Like, this was a very enjoyable movie. And then the fact that it's doing so well, and you're going to lead to, I remember a lot of people talk about they would love to see a sequel to Unbreakable, but you never thought you'd see it. And that movie came out, what, the late 90s? And now it's maybe 20 years later when it comes out, and that's going to be a thing that people will be excited to see. Like, who would have guessed that?
He'd been talking about it, but
I mean,
he talked about it when all his movies were garbage, though. So you know, I kudos to him, man. I don't, like, you can see the talent was there, but I think he got caught up in his own hype, and every movie had to have some sort of twist, and that's all it was. And he forgot about how to make a movie. All he wanted to do was go, "Ha, gotcha!" At the end, there was like the whole. Did you ever watch Robot Chicken?
No.
They used to, it was the, like, stop motion show on Adult Swim. It was a screen show. And they used to do M. Night Shyamalan's What a Twist all the time. So he became a parody. But, well, good. I mean, you know, hopefully this is something else. And, you know, to be honest, hopefully it's not a split sequel. You know, hopefully he can go and make another movie that's good.
No, I think the next movie that's confirmed or talked about, if not confirmed yet, is going to be an Unbreakable sequel. And it's going to be kind of, you know, Bruce Willis versus James McAvoy.
Now, see, that's what I would actually rather him avoid.
But think about it.
In a selfish way, like, I don't know, I never hated the guy. I just thought his movies were bad. But it's kind of like, I really like the sense in Unbreakable, so please make another good movie again.
Wait a second.
You know?
But if it's kind of like, he made two good movies in a row, it led to a sequel that he wanted to do that actually people want to see. It's like, you know, as imagine if they did, like, at the end of Fast 6, and you know, this, like, Jason Statham's at the end, and then all of a sudden they did the next Fast movie was a prequel. When they did the Dominican Republic. It's kind of like, you know, you'd be like, what? Like, no, I wanted to see System versus Vin Diesel and The Rock. And it's kind of like, it's a movie that people actually want to see, and he actually wants to do. Like, that's usually is one or the other, because it's kind of like, you know, Blade Runner sequel. It's kind of like, and it's funny where I trust the director because it's the guy that is Sicario and Arrival and Prisoners and stuff like that. But other than that, it's like, Blade Runner came out a long time ago, and it wasn't like this movie, like, I can't wait to see a sequel. It wasn't really asked for that. But,
exactly.
But it's kind of like, you know, they made sequels that people don't ask for because either they're bored or it makes money. So when you actually have a sequel that's kind of unexpected, and that's really, it's funny. I don't even know if this is the right word, organically made, because, like, you know, once you saw Bruce Willis' character, that entire movie takes on a completely different feeling, and it makes a lot more sense. And it's kind of like, you know, it's a shared universe. Because I told Darlene, you know, like, I knew where it was in Philly because I lived in Philly. Like, I recognize the Philly Zoo. And that's something kind of like people don't think about. Most of his movies are in, like, Philly.
Yeah.
So it's easy to think of as a shared universe if you wanted to, because they're in the same place. And then especially now where you have a character from one of his movies shows up in another movie that fits. And they did a good job of explaining where superpowers come from. Like, it's a whole mental thing. And, hey, it doesn't always have to be – it doesn't always have to be radiation or solar rays or a spider bite. So whatever works.
All right. So let's get out of here. There's no real movies coming out this week because next week the big one comes out. So,
Lego Batman.
Yes. So, thanks for listening, guys. Stunt Granny, all social media, subscribe, SoundCloud, whatever your RSS feed, look for Stunt Granny. That's us. You'll find us. I'm Jeremy. I'm out of here. Have a good night, guys.
For Jeremy Mays, I'm Shahid Abdul-Hadi, and please don't re-gift used toilet paper. The sign off is a real gift. We are out.